Time now for hour number two of Dr. and Mrs. Future here on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Mrs. Future?
Hi, honey.
I'd like to work with you, Mrs. Future, in telling the audience a little bit about Annalise.
Oh, our guest today. Yeah. Yes, a dear friend who I have had the pleasure of doing a lot of work with lately on her new book, The Art and Science of Caregiving. We have in the studio Annalise Schinzinger, and she is a career caregiver and has just published a new book that is intended to be a sharing of some very beautiful stories of her experiences over the last 25 years with wonderful people who she's had the privilege of giving care to, and animals as well. And also, there are a number of resources that are made available in her book, including some forms and checklists and questionnaires and a whole bunch of links for extended resources for people who are trying to answer questions about how to handle end of life and finding the right caregiver, etc.
And I got to ask you, Annalise, how did you get into this taking care of people's dying? How did that come in as a career choice?
What ultimately prompted me to become a career hospice caregiver or death doula?
Death doula? Are you seriously?
That's the latest term.
Hilarious.
There are several.
I thought doulas give birth to people, I guess.
Midwives.
Yeah,
midwives
doula
to the dying.
You know what? I looked up the word doula, and doula is a Croatian word for slave. It means woman. Yes, but it literally means like a female servant. And when you put it in the context of the nurses who are there at the beginning and the end of life, it has taken on a very positive connotation of sort of like a servant of God or servant of the dream. Or
well, wouldn't that be a, more of a death,
servant
a, death
of
angel?
Life and wouldn't death?
A, I mean, a servant of God would be an angel, right? So it'd be a death angel as opposed to.
Yes, we help usher people to the other side. But we do so by taking care of their physical, body, emotions, spiritual questions, if they feel prompted to ask them. They're especially so physical and emotional.
So the things that come up at the end of life, whole different questions about who you are and what you're doing here and what your life meant, and they talk to you about those sorts of things?
A life review is a really important part of the last stages of life. It helps a person validate their lives, that they lived a good life, a worthwhile life. They can highlight the ups and downs when they do a life review and share what they learned, like through a divorce or a difficult choice regarding employment or a move.
Oh, now this is a new idea for me, a life review. And so this you would engage with an elder as a practice when you're actually engaging with them for their end-of-life care.
It often arises naturally because many elders like to tell stories about their lives. Those who aren't as talkative, I will ask questions to draw out information about their personal lives, their professional lives, their partners, their children, if they have any, their grandchildren. I like to learn from elders. That is what ultimately inspired me to work with the elderly and the end-of-life phase. The end-of-life specifically because of an experience I had, first with my dog, then with my grandmother, and then with my mother.
Sort of learning to cope with the various kinds of traumas that come when end-of-life is sort of knocking on the door.
Yes.
So your dog was your first teacher?
My dog was my first teacher.
How so, when your dog died?
I took her to the veterinarian. She was 16 and a half. Her name was Hazel. I thought she might die en route, so I took her out of the car and spent time with her in a hollow in the earth that looked like a womb. And I stayed there for several minutes with her, expecting her to take her last breath, but she didn't. So I put her back in the car, drove all the way to Irvine to Newport
better,
Beach.
Feel better, I almost, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was able to relax in the car, and she was alive when we arrived at the clinic. Mm. I handed Hazel over, thinking that the veterinarian would save her.
Mm. Ultimately, finally, I've got help.
Exactly. But he put her to sleep. This is an era pre-cell phone, pre-internet.
Without asking your permission?
Without asking permission, without contacting us. I was probably thinking about it now. I was probably on my drive home from Newport Beach to Irvine, and he didn't want her to have her suffer anymore. He wanted to relieve her suffering, knowing that she had kidney failure. But I wasn't given a choice to return to the clinic, to be with her, to hold her, to say goodbye, family members to say goodbye. It was sudden and shocking. Mm. And I made a promise at that moment when he told me he had put her down to be present with loved ones when they died, if at all possible. Mm. And that promise is held.
Wow. So Hazel taught you the first lesson of caregiving, which is to be present.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah.
And a completion, it sounds like, too, that to have completed that relationship with your pet, to say goodbye for the last time.
Yes, so important for us humans, right? And I believe for the pet also to have, you know, that the connection, the loving connection.
Yeah. Maybe that continues afterwards, you know, that love.
Oh, it definitely does. I had an experience when I was in Brazil where a friend was taking care of a cat. She was hit by a car in California. I was in Brazil, and I wasn't able to say goodbye. We connected through dreams.
You and the cat. Able,
yes.
And this was
And I saw her, actually. I have visions sometimes, and the day after I saw her running towards me. So there are other ways to communicate, and that's a very worthwhile subject, and it's in its own.
So in the dream, wow, you actually learned that her spirit had been set free, and then afterwards you found out that she was no longer living.
I found out that she was living before a spiritual ceremony in Brazil, and I connected with her during the ceremony and then through dreams that lasted months.
Oh,
for months.
Wow.
And then I finally, in the last series of a dream, the last of a series, our hearts were connected, and I felt I could let go of the remorse of not having been able to come back in time to see her and say goodbye.
Wow.
You completed in the dream space.
I did.
Yes, I guess that's the handy, the dandy value of dream space. You can complete things that you couldn't do on the physical.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
All right, folks, we're going to come back after this break talk some more with our guest, Annalisa Schinzinger, about the art and science of caregiving.
What kind of hell are we going to raise?
Do you want to get to heaven?
Well, I like a good, nice, peaceful world. You know? Heaven on earth kind of would do me fine, I think.
All right. Well, it doesn't have to be too challenging. Just challenging enough to take you past your limits.
Okay. Well, yeah. Perhaps what we need is a little help on this side, and maybe a connection with the other side might be part of the answer.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
The other side is wisdom of the past, all the people that have died, and of the future, which is yet to be born. And those two worlds are often mythically tied together at the end of life and the beginning of life. Is that your experience
truly,
as a death
truly.
Doula?
Yes. Yeah. I've had many dreams about loved ones who have passed over directly with them, receiving messages from them.
Hmm. Like they're still alive?
Exactly.
I mean, kind of messages, like they have their rational, coherent minds in place,
yes,
even though they have no body as we know it.
One of the most vivid dreams I have had about my mother was seeing her on the telephone in the dream time. She was a librarian. She was wearing her light gray wool librarian suit.
In the dream?
In the dream. Beautiful gray hair. And she was talking on the phone. And I looked at her and I said, "Mom, does this mean you've come back?" And as I approached her, I was joyous. Oh, she's back on Earth. She's alive. I saw that her eyes were hollows. There were no eyes.
Oops. Mm.
And I immediately realized that her spirit was ever present, was just like right above me.
Huh.
She wasn't confined to her body. She had been freed of her body, so wow. She could go wherever she pleased.
That's what the hollow eyes meant, that she was free of her body?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her spirit wasn't occupying her body anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just a puppet, or her AI, if you will, from the other side.
You know, I think that's one of the most shocking things about experiencing death, especially for the first time, is when you see someone that you love having departed their body, and how it's so obvious that the body is just not them. It's just what's left. Like that thing that animates it, that makes it alive, that makes it the person you love, is not there anymore.
Well, so most of the time, I'd agree, but I've heard stories, there's Tibetan stories of the highest form of attainment is where you take your body with you in a kind of a, where you beam out in a blaze of rainbow light.
And a little pearl is left.
A little pearl. Yeah. Everything you need to know about my life is in that pearl.
That's one of my favorite Buddhist deities is the Shakyamuni deity who dissolves body into light.
And, you know, if you do have universal wisdom, you know how light and energy and matter all work, and you'd be able to play with it in all kinds of ways, I would imagine, including taking your molecules with you.
Hmm.
But most of the time at this point, that's not normal, right?
Well, one of the myths, I think, about Shakyamuni is that the reason why the rainbow light body was possible is because of the lotus birth. So I think it's kind of like, born an avatar, lived an avatar, departed as an avatar.
Never forgot his avatarness.
That's right. That's right. Was able to manifest it again.
But many evolved lamas and rinpoches leave just a speck of, like a pearl, or a few little remnants. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Buddhist, but I have Buddhist friends.
Fingernail.
And I've heard this. Yeah. That is all that is left of their physical body.
The mysteries. Yeah. Well, consciousness is such a wide open space, and we know so little about it and what you can really do when you cultivate it.
Well, we know that matter is condensed energy. We know the thought's energy, so maybe thought can control condensed energy in a way we haven't thought of yet.
Oh, that's a wide open field. I think it's fascinating. Yeah, and so many people who are highly evolved know when they're going to die, the day, the time.
It's not a big mystery to them.
For them, it's not. No, for most of us, we don't know.
Well, the closest I've heard in our culture is euthanasia, where you choose when to die. Now, have you run into that yourself?
I have had clients who have spoken about it. I haven't been with a client who has chosen it and gone through it. But I certainly have heard stories and seen documentaries about it. Living while dying.
And that has a chance to, what I understand is that you have a chance to say goodbye to all your loved ones consciously before you go.
Yeah, but we can do that if a person is slowly declining from cancer or MS or ALS. There's Parkinson's. There's so many illnesses that allow us time. My mother, for example, after a year and a half dealing with ovarian cancer, partway through she said, "I'm so glad I have cancer and I didn't die from a heart attack or an accident and not have time to express my love and gratitude." She had a year and a half. There was a time when we all thought she was in the clear. She was in remission, and then it came back. But she had time to express all that she wanted to. And she said she had no regrets, no remorse about anything. A beautiful passage. So whether the person chooses medical aid in dying, which requires a doctor's prescription,
make sure you're
and
not
certain qualifications.
Yeah, right. You need to be mentally sound and such.
Exactly. Yeah. Have 6 months or less left. and be able to take the medication unassisted. Mm-hmm. And it passes through the scrutiny of two physicians. And
mm-hmm. Here in California?
First phase takes 16 days and then another 2 days. Mm. So it's heavily supervised, and rightly so. It's not like a person is given the medication and then can prescribe it and then can take it the next day. Mm-hmm. They are given a chance also to evaluate. And research shows that half of the people who are prescribed the medication decide not to use it, but they are grateful to have it as a safety measure. If the pain gets too extreme, they know it's there. Mm. It's mostly people in great pain. Mm. They just can't tolerate the pain. The medication isn't helping them.
Right.
And that's when it just gets unbearable to the point, well, why bother? This is no fun.
Right. It takes over, the pain takes over their lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
So beyond your formative experiences as caregiver, what are some of the most important things that you learned by attending people as they approach the end of life?
The beauty of passage, the sacredness. The veil is very thin. It's truly magical what happens. It's a state of grace, a state of love, very high vibratory field. There was one case where I was with a woman who died at 3 a.m. Christmas morning. So Christmas Eve, I was with her and holding her. She wanted to be held. She was 97. And I'd been with her at this point 3 years, 3 months, and 27 days. And she had been given 3 weeks of life when I met her.
Wow.
How did you hold her?
Spoon fashion. Mm. She just wanted to be held. She wanted to be comforted. And what happened with her is she had congestive heart failure. And the moment she passed, I felt electricity coursing through her body like an electric guitar.
Wow.
And that was the end. She took her final breath after that.
Wow.
The beauty of her passage was joining in the high vibratory field of Christmas, people around the world celebrating, and other religious practices, Hanukkah, you know, celebrating, praying. Mm-hmm. And I had visions. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Mm. It was truly a state of grace.
Wow.
It reminds me of the idea of life force or life energy. Like there's an electrical spark that inhabits our bodies, and when we die, it leaves, and you can literally see it. You can see the life literally go, like they turned off the power.
Yeah.
And which leads to the question, what's your understanding of that? Is there a life force, do you think, that the body's inhabiting, and it can go other places and connect to other sources of sustenance?
That. Yeah, it's consciousness that continues.
The consciousness is the energy.
Force. Yeah. I have felt the life force of a little mosquito or a gnat, you know, approaching it. It's like survival instinct, mm-hmm. right? But so much bigger than its own little life.
Mm.
And we have that. We have that life force within us. Mm. And when we expire, right, we all have an expiration date, so to speak,
yeah.
that energy matter continues, I believe.
Mm.
The physical drops away. Our shell is just a shell at this point, but what is alive in us continues. Our consciousness continues. The life force that is like primal, it's universal life force energy, what people say is chi, mana.
Yeah, some suggest the analogy was there. It comes out of your body, it joins with other life forces that are coming out and mixes in a kind of a cosmic soup.
Ooh.
Where it's then squeezed out into new bodies.
There we
constantly.
Go.
You know? So it's like an ongoing process of recombination. Yeah, some would say that. What do we know? From our point of view, yeah. Mythically, we have the Greek myths where I guess the death doulas would bring people to the shore of the sacred rivers, like the Styx, where they would meet the boatmen who would take them to the other worlds.
Yeah, the shore.
Yeah, the shore, the boatmen.
Yeah.
So did you ever see evidence of a guide that came to pick people up from your...
What I have seen is loved ones.
Loved ones
like
coming
this,
from the other
this
side.
This woman who I called Mrs. Birch to protect her family's privacy. I saw her husband, who had died a number of years earlier, by her side.
Wow.
Many, many people's loved ones come to usher them home, to guide them home.
Amazing.
So to speak.
Wow.
Do you think this is a real thing, or do you think it's DMT
There's,
release of the brain at the
Oh, I think
of death?
It's real. There's a book that Joyce and Barry Vassell wrote, A Mother's Final Gift, about her mother's last 3 years with them. She was continuously speaking to her husband who had died. Wow. And the husband would tell her things about their grandchildren that only a spirit would know because of the time travel.
The spirit know the combination of safes?
There we go. Let's break some banks up.
Just curious. Have you ever heard of that? Or is that a different level of consciousness? Anyway, we got to go to a break. We'll continue after this.
Coast to Coast AM, coming to a universe near you tonight.
Julie Ryan, a medical intuitive, joins us to talk about how angels help the dying cross over.
Warp Drive for the mind, Coast to Coast AM.
Okay, welcome back to The Futures and our guest, Annalisa Schinzinger, who wrote a book on the art and science of caregiving, stories of inspired elders with an end-of-life guidebook.
Yeah. So you yourself are one of these angels who helps people to pass over. And I'd love to hear from you a little bit about who this book can help and what kinds of ways people can learn from it to help those at the end of life.
This book was written to share the wisdom of elders that I was fortunate to receive and learn from during my experiences with them. And what I learned over 25 years caring for the elderly and the dying about contributing to a peaceful and gentle passage. So the book is meant for family members, friends, volunteers, professionals who work with the elderly and the dying, and also for professional caregivers. Some who are entering their field, they're inspired to be a death doula, a midwife to the dying, and they want to learn more.
I mean, like Spock's baby care for the other side, you know, the way out.
It's for the way out.
Yeah.
Exactly. How to enhance the quality of life, how to bring more joy, peace, ease, grace, comfort.
Does that take a lot of attention of yours? Can you have multiple clients at once? Or how many people can you really give care to at any one time?
There was one time that I had five clients, so I'd go from one house to the next, to the next, to the next. Finally, I would go home. Then
five.
One, two, three, four, five. Yeah. No, it was over like a two-day period.
2 days. Five over
different
2 days.
Different shifts. Each one. One was overnight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Some of the stories from your book really stuck with me and gave me very profound insights and awareness that I didn't have before. And one of them that was so vivid for me is one of your people was actually very afraid to die and was lingering and really didn't know what to expect. And maybe it would be good for you to describe how you helped her with that.
A caregiver's presence, whether they are a family member or a friend or a professional or volunteer, influences the person who is dying and those around them. Their state of mind, their state of being, their comfort level with the dying process. In this particular case, the caregiver was an experienced caregiver, but not as an end-of-life caregiver. So she was scared to death of death, literally speaking.
Wow. And she knew all about care, but not about dying.
Right.
Wow.
So the elderly woman, who had been my client, but then when she needed more care, and I just didn't have enough time to take on more care for her. So her daughter called, and I went the next day to the house, and I saw how extremely fearful, I'll call her Mary. Mary was. And the book, I called her Alice. So she was very fearful, rigid. Her knuckles were white. And I went up to her. She recognized me. And I gave her a kiss on her forehead. And I took her hand. I sat next to her. And I said calming, soothing words, things that came to me intuitively, how much I loved her, how much I appreciated her. And my calm, peaceful presence passed to her. I told her everything is all right. Everything is just as it should be. And she was able to relax. I was with her for about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Then I had to go to San Francisco. I had an appointment that I couldn't miss. And her daughter called me and said that Alice had passed 2 hours after I left. An hour or two. I can't remember now. It's in the book.
Just after you left, huh?
Yeah. She was able to relax and surrender and know that all was fine. If somebody's terrified of death, then it passes to the person who's dying that something's wrong, I should be scared, something's not right, and they're tense and they can't relax. It's all about being able to relax, allow the death process to
is a death process place. A feeling of something's not right? I mean, is it, that's where ultimately things go totally wrong.
Well, that's what
most people's fears.
That's what fear is about. That's what terror
But the actual experience of death?
Death can be very gentle and peaceful. The person just takes their last breath. It can be sudden, in an accident, a heart attack. There are so many different
ways.
When you sleep, yeah, that's a...
They call that one the golden death.
Yeah, right.
Aldous Huxley took LSD just before he died.
Right, and others have followed in his footsteps.
Yeah, but most of our culture is into morphine and narcotics.
Because they're in pain, many times death is accompanied by a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Right,
and that's a big epidemic right now, fentanyl, you know, that sort of thing. What's your feelings on that? Do you think narcotics should be used in the end of life?
I had a big conflict, inner conflict, regarding morphine because I was concerned that it clouded the mind and I wanted to do my part to contribute to a clear passage.
Yeah, you've often quoted the Dalai Lama and his feelings that the state of mind that a person is experiencing at the end of life opens the doorways for their next incarnations, if that's their belief.
Especially their state of joy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
And so clarity of mind during passage was always my focus and goal, to do what I could to contribute to that. Mm-hmm. When I had a client that required morphine and my administering morphine, I thought about leaving the profession.
Why? Mm-hmm. Why? Because it was dulling the mind?
Yeah. And then I spoke to the daughter of a nurse who was this client's best friend. And the daughter had been prescribed morphine to help her with pain from a serious arm injury and surgery. And the daughter said, it was no problem. It helped with the pain. And I realized that at this point, anything that can help with pain, because pain causes contraction, right? The body can't relax because it's focused on the pain. It's tense and tight. Contracted. So that's
not a preferential state.
That's not conducive to relaxing.
No.
So I made peace with my prejudice about morphine. Morphine helps me.
It really
people.
Helps you relax on that level of just feeling the pain. What I understand is that it makes the pain just go away sometimes, just like just leaves like a cloud.
Yeah.
And it's a miracle. And that's why we use it.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that we get addicted to it's another story, but the fact that is that it does relieve us of pain on a profound level started to come in the Civil War, I think.
Oh, a godsend. Yeah. Hmm. Really, modern medicine for pain control, palliative care doctors, nurses, help a patient whether they are dying or not. It could be post-surgery, and it's all about pain management and comfort and safety as well.
Hmm. Right. And so we're actually living in a very blessed era to have access to so many tools that can ease the pain.
It sounds to me like you work with the person both in the body and mind. If the body's feeling pain, it's hard for the mind to operate. So you get the pain levels low. Then who you're working with, I would imagine, can open up more to the death experience and you can be there for them in terms of their memories and such. So the mind, I'm kind of curious, do you ever record any of these events when people are telling their last stories?
We did with our mother. We recorded with our father before he actually died suddenly.
He got his best stories?
Yeah, very profound. I recommend doing an oral history, either written. I helped one elderly man with a book, his life book. He had a fascinating life. And so I am very interested in this myself. My mother was a librarian, a historian, a genealogist, so it was passed down. And I like to do this for family members, right. You know, the children, the grandchildren, so they know about their grandpa, great-grandpa. Huh. And in regards to the mind, there have been times when I've been reading from the Tibetan Book of the Living and the Dying. I'll be by the bedside of the person who's in a coma. Mm-hmm. And then I'll come to a passage, and if I feel it's appropriate for that particular person, I will read it aloud.
Oh, right.
So I believe even it's been medically proven that if a person is in a coma, they can still hear. That is the last sense to go.
Wow.
I will talk to them. I will read to them. I will hold their hand. I'll communicate.
Be there for
I'll
them.
I'll be there for them.
We got a caller, Mrs. Future?
Let's take a question here from Mike in Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show. Did you want to ask a question for Annalise or say something?
Yeah, I lost my father actually 2 weeks ago today.
Oh,
I was with him.
Sorry. Sympathy.
But one thing that I realized when it was happening, even a couple of days before, I told him it was okay to go if you're ready. And I think that gave him a lot of comfort knowing that it was okay. I just wanted to hear her thoughts about that.
Oh, you're totally right about that. In my stories in the book, I mention how often I say that. Many people are able to let go once they receive permission and once they know that their loved ones will be all right. Some linger because they're concerned about a husband, a child, and once they are reassured that they will be fine, then they can let go.
Yeah, that's how I felt when it happened to me, you know. It was like he waited and wanted permission, you know,
so to speak.
Wow, you felt he was waiting and you were able to help him feel, like, confident?
Yeah, I think he just wanted the reassurance from me that it was okay. I knew it was his time. But it's almost like it was reassuring to them. And so I didn't experience that with my mom when she passed, but I experienced that with my dad. And I just thought it was interesting.
Wow. So. They have such different spirits, huh? Everybody has such a unique perspective at these important moments in time.
Great that you were able to be with him and to talk to him and to reassure him.
Yeah.
That's the connection between a parent and a child that is so precious.
Yeah.
Has he come to you in any dreams at all?
We have to go to a break. Do you mind if you
want? All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate you sharing. Bye-bye.
Okay, welcome back. We're talking to Annalise Schinzinger on the art and science of caregiving for end of life.
Yeah, and we do have one more caller.
Okay, let's bring in the caller. I got a couple questions come in textually as well. So
okay.
Let's go to the caller.
Hi. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm. I have had experiences helping people passing away. I'm a Catholic, and Catholics believe also that people need to be comforted before they pass. Mm. And one experience I had with my cousin was dying of cancer, and he could not die. And suddenly we got together, and I talked to him, like she says, very calmly, helped him out. And he passed away within like half hour.
Oh, thank you. John, we have
making
some
a lot of background
kind of
noise
on your line. It's hard to understand.
Phone, like wind or something, or motion?
Yeah, it's the wind.
Oh,
yeah. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. Oh, that's better.
That's much better.
So
thank you.
Could you just say that again to make sure everyone heard that?
You were able to comfort.
The comfort really was so important.
Yeah, and it helped him have the confidence to pass on. Yeah?
Yeah, it took only like half hour and he passed away very calm. And my other two friends, they do help people at the end of their lives. So there's a lot of things that happens before they die. Even if somebody like people that have never had a brain, you know, that their brain is just water. At the end, a lot of these people, they can even talk before they die.
Or
people with Alzheimer's, they don't remember, but before they die, they become normal again.
Really?
Amazing.
That's a concept you talked about the other night.
Thank you for reminding us.
Yeah. Terminal lucidity. It often happens the day
terminal
before,
lucidity.
The moments before where a person will attain great clarity. If they had a brain tumor and couldn't speak before, the words were garbled, they can say complete sentences. One client said, "I am like a phoenix rising from the ashes."
Wow.
Before she died, she couldn't put words together before. Other people, as you mentioned, John, who have Alzheimer's, can speak clearly. My grandmother was an example who could speak clearly.
How long does that last?
It's minutes to maybe an hour.
We're of terminal lucidity.
Terminal lucidity. I like it.
Just you think part of the natural process.
You want to be there
at the end of life.
If you want to connect with them one last time.
We believe that it's like when people are getting to the other world, and we believe that when you get to the other world, you're going to be perfect. Even if you had some deformities in this life, when you get over there, everything's going to be perfect. And that's why even people with brain disease or anything over there, they're already passing, so they're becoming normal, real pure perfect.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you so much, John. That's a beautiful thing to say.
Yeah, back in the soup, you know, you're whole again.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks,
John,
for calling. I know you have a chapter in the book called Natural Signs of Death.
Yeah, normal death activity.
Normal death activity.
And the physical signs and symptoms of approaching death are listed, and the emotional and mental aspects. And then I touch on the spiritual also. But the spiritual is such a vast subject.
It is. And there's one of the questions that come in that just, how do different spiritual traditions of people affect
that
treatment?
That is a forthcoming book that my colleagues and I intend to
on
write.
On that topic.
Yes. Because I had started to write about it in this book, and I couldn't do the subject justice. I said, no.
Is there a commonality, though? Is like, do you have the same care if they believe in one God or many gods?
I mean, think that's irrelevant. I believe it's the state of the heart.
The heart.
And level of joy, the level of peace, inner peace. Right? Independent of the religion or atheistic beliefs.
Those are the core values that connect us all as humans.
Right.
Right.
Transcends religion. But the religious and spiritual practices around the world fascinate me. And my colleagues and I have decided to broach that subject.
Right. Well, one other thing that you said in the book that I think is such a beautiful thing to hold in mind when you are in that position with someone you love, either they're passing or you're passing, is that every person has their own death, and it is a unique personal experience that only they can have.
Yes.
And so just being in a state of honoring without needing to have your own opinion about it, right? But just witnessing is such an important part of sharing that process with someone.
Yeah, and allowing it to be without wanting to change anything, allowing their process to unfold naturally, assisting with comfort and things like that. But some people have a very clear idea of how they want to die or where they want to die. And it's beautiful to see each person's expression at the end.
Is there any famous death scenes in movies that you particularly recommend? Like Brainstorms, for example.
You're probably a better one to speak about that. I do more writing and reading than watching movies.
Yeah, I like Brainstorms. Natalie Wood's last film, where she actually died on the set.
You know what I thought?
Circumstances.
That's right.
Might be an interesting direction to go. When I was reading your book, I spent a lot of time after having taken in all of the beautiful stories of the elders who you had worked with. I also was reading through the resources, and you know, there's a bunch of resources which are links on the internet, and so you can start discovering so many things that you didn't know about what kinds of burials are possible and where various kinds of resources are for people who are dying or people who have to prepare for death or hiring a caregiver. one fun thing I did was start researching green burials, which mm-hmm. is a whole area that's apparently new and coming. And
I want to give links. A plug right now to a movie that is going to be aired at the Del Mar. Mm. It's the Hospice of Santa Cruz in conjunction with Natural Death Care Initiative, which I'm a part of, a collective of end-of-life support people. It is in the parlor about home funerals. Many people attending have experience with green burials or in charge of a green burial cemetery that is being created on Soquel Avenue. So this is for locals, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an up-and-coming subject that many people want to do. It's where the deceased is wrapped in a ceremonial cloth, for example, and lowered into the ground, straight into the ground.
Right. Mm. And I loved learning that until about 70 years ago, all burials were natural burials like this. Mm-hmm. And it's really only been with the invention of new chemicals for embalming and the whole way that we do everything now so industrially that it's seen as somehow not natural.
I heard there's an increased interest in Viking funerals.
Which is floating on a boat while burning.
It's very natural, you know. I mean, you're not
fire and water.
Fire. Yeah. Right. On the water, wow.
You might have trouble getting the ashes passed by whatever government you're doing it in.
Well, nevertheless, I think people don't know how much there is support for families to be present with the body after death long enough to bring everyone to completion. You have a number of days where the body can be kept cold for people to come in and view it. And if it's not being transported, there's a number of options for home burial. If you have a burial ground somehow in your private property or if you're going to a cemetery, there's certain legal requirements for the
disposition permit, which is transporting the body. Holly Blue Hawkins has Last Respects Consulting. She's a specialist in natural green burials and coaches people, educates. She's a good reference for locals and people who want to have a phone call. Holly Blue Hawkins, Last Respects Consulting.
Wow. So many things to learn.
Any of your clients ever wanted to put you in their will? After
I had one client who gave me $2,000 in her will. I thought that was sweet. I had been with her for seven and a half years.
Aww. Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were like two peas in a pod.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, like I could have, people thought I was her daughter. a true love connection.
Wow. That's awesome. Well, all right. Well, let's take the last couple of minutes here and give people some information about your book. Where can we find this wonderful
give a talk
resource?
At the bookshop Santa Cruz soon, or we hope?
In the autumn, yes.
Really? Oh, okay.
Autumn. That's, and I'll be giving talks at libraries. I've spoken to Aptos and Central Libraries. So that information will be posted on my website and a Facebook page.
And the website is?
artandscienceofcaregiving.com.
And
the Facebook page is Art and Science of Elder Care and End of Life.
Okay. Thank you, Annalise.
And you can buy the book on Amazon. You can go to my website, push a button, and it'll go straight to Amazon. You can buy it from me. You can buy it at Bookshop Santa Cruz. Support your local bookstore. And it'll be available at the library, too.
Great.
At some point.
Now, if you could have the ideal helper, say the perfect little robot that did whatever you want, what would you have it do as an elder caregiver?
Somebody with a big heart and very patient and kind.
Be there for them.
To be there, to be really sensitive, to notice what my needs are without necessarily having to speak them. I learned that with Helene in Bonnie Doon. She taught me, because she was a woman of few words, I had to intuit what she wanted.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's the kind of robot I want, but I prefer a human being.
Yeah, okay. Humans first. Okay. Human apprentices, then Michelle. Okay, thank you so much, Annalise.
Thank you.
Really great having you.
Pleasure.
Michelle, and thanks for another week, folks. Your time. Appreciate your attention, and look forward to any emails, future@ksco.com. future@ksco.com. Love your feedback.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Bill Graff, for traffic, news, and weather.